Well, now we have a little bonus. We keep up with the labor movement, and the labor movement seems to be actually moving, which is special. And we our authority on these matters is Tony Leah of Unifor, 222, Oshawa, GM. That's all the brassy, big, everybody knows GM. That's auto workers. Are you there, Tony?
I am, Phil. How are you doing?
Well, thanks for joining us. We were speaking to you last week and weeks previous because we're trying to keep track of these pretty dramatic fights that have been going on between Doug Ford and organized labor. And CUPE really laid some on him recently and beat him off when he tried to take the constitutional rights of workers away. But now we've had a vote and everything. As a result, I mean, they did win the round with Ford, and then they had to go back to negotiating. So can you tell us about some of the developments on that front?
Sure. The vote was announced today. Some over 75% of the members cast a vote, which is great engagement. 73% of them endorsed the tentative agreement that had been reached. They won more wages than Doug Ford's government was willing to offer initially before his misguided attempt to rule the strike illegal. Mm-hmm. And they rallied a lot of support from the public, from the labor movement, which helped them in their bargaining. They still fell somewhat short of their objectives, and they were very frank about that. But they appealed for their members to be proud of what they had achieved, which really is something to be proud of, to force the provincial government to back down and rescind a bill that they had passed. I don't know when that's happened before. And to continue fighting for more wages for those workers and for more services for kids in school, which was a big part of their fight that still remains to be achieved. And I think that the way that it was laid out by the leader of their bargaining team, Laura Walton, this morning at the press conference was pretty good, which was, you know, we've achieved this much, but we're not stopping here, and we're going to continue fighting.
Mm-hmm. Fred Hahn, is one of those people that I follow. If listeners want to keep up with this, I think the CUPE local leader you mentioned also has a Twitter account, right? People can just with her name. It's Laura.
It's at Walton Mom.
At Walton Mom.
Yes.
And then there's Fred Hahn as I mentioned, is one of those. Mm-hmm. People now going to these sites, there's new information coming from these leaders because they're making us aware of other struggles. Fred Hahn's site today cited a action that's taking place at McMaster. You spoke to us, I think, last week about this. It's mm-hmm. Local
3906.
3906, these are the teaching assistants, research assistants at McMaster. My understanding is on Wednesday at 1 p.m. at the Student Union building at McMaster, which is near the Mills Library, there's going to be a teach-in starting at 1 o'clock Wednesday, and people like Henry Giroux is going to be there. Sandy Shaw, MPP from Hamilton West. There's going to be students for CUPE 3906. What's going on with that local and the issues that you know?
They, like many other locals representing graduate student TAs and research assistants and other sessional staff, are fighting against a really tough imposition of controls on wages over the last number of years that really has been led by the provincial government as well, restricting wage increases. So they're falling far behind. They really make poverty-level wages, I think on average $12,000 a year. And clearly, you can't. There's no way that you can survive on that. And so they're fighting for better wages, more guarantees of hours, compensation for tuition increases as graduate students, mm-hmm. And they're fighting quite a courageous fight against a very wealthy university. McMaster has been pulling in lots of money over the last few years, declaring surpluses. Has the money to pay them, but doesn't want to pay. And as McMaster administration has appealed to teaching assistants to scab, they've sent them messages saying, you know, if you sign up to continue working, we'll keep it confidential. Really points out the need for anti-scab legislation, and uh-huh. it's a tough fight. So the teach-in is a great way to continue mobilizing support. You know, and of course, the tradition of teach-ins goes a long way back as part of the progressive movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was pleased to see also at that, I guess it was Fred Hahn's site, that the United Steelworkers 1005 sent a contingent to walk on the picket line. And you, I think, told us that the buses are observing the picket line, right?
Yes, the Hamilton Street Railway workers are refusing to drive across the picket line. There's been supporters on the picket line from the Ontario Federation of Labour, including the president and the local labour council and quite a few other people in the labour movement. So they have been getting lots of support.
By the way, do you know how many people we're talking about in this 3906 local, QP?
I don't have the number right at hand, but it's like a couple of thousand people.
They're a couple of thousand. Okay.
They're one third of the workforce.
Ah, yes.
McMaster University, mm-hmm. and they get 3.7% of the wages.
I'm sorry to be laughing. I just don't know what else to do.
No, I know. It's shocking. You know, when you think about figures like that, you know, they're one third of the workforce.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Tony Lee, political action chair, local 222 Unifor. And there is news in the auto industry in the United States, which is really fascinating. What is that? Has there been a vote of some type?
There has. And I think it warrants being called an earthquake in the labor movement
earthquake.
In North America. Yes, I would call it an earthquake. People will remember that with the corruption scandal in the UAW, 15 top officers of the union being arrested, pleading guilty, being jailed, including two former international presidents for the corruption and theft of money, basically of the members' money. It really created a crisis within that union that was only resolved when the leadership agreed to a consent decree with the U.S. government to put to the members, did they want to change the way that their leadership was elected from having it done at a convention to having all of the members have the right to vote? And last year, 64% of the members voted for the right to vote, not surprisingly. And so that first election for the top leadership of the UAW has just happened. They finished counting the votes on Friday. 104,000 votes were returned from active workers and retirees who all had the right to vote. And so far, the incumbent leadership, what has been known as the administration caucus, that was really set up by Walter Reuther some 75 years ago and has controlled the union almost completely ever since, are getting wiped out, basically, not completely, but they are really being rejected by the membership. The only positions that they won in the first round of voting was five positions as regional director where their candidates ran unopposed, where they were acclaimed.
Only one where they were unopposed.
They won the elections where they were not opposed.
Yeah.
In every contest.
Which,
where
that's
had,
what they were used to. That's tradition.
That's exactly. That's their tradition. They're very comfortable with that. Every position where somebody was running against their slate, they either got defeated or are in a runoff. Mm-hmm. And that includes the secretary-treasurer, which is the number two position of that union. A very important position was won by a member of the Members United slate, the group that fought for one member, one vote, Margaret Mock, who is a line worker at Chrysler.
It's not circulating in a brass somewhere.
She was in local leadership for a while. I think that her plant closed, mm-hmm. and she had to move to a different local. She's an auto worker.
A
real one, and defeated the incumbent secretary treasurer, and not by a small margin, by the way, not by a small margin at all. She got, I'm looking for my numbers here, she got 63,121 votes, and the establishment incumbent, who's already doing the job, got 38,813. She got 60% of the vote, over 60% of the vote. Wow. And for the top position, international president, there were five people running. Nobody got a majority, but the incumbent, Ray Curry, got 38% of the vote. In other words, 62% of the people who voted against him. And he's in a runoff with the Members United candidate, Sean Fain, who got 37.5% of the vote. They were very close to neck and neck.
Well, I think you're right. It's an earthquake, and if we had it queued up, we would play Happy Days Are Here Again. we're talking about the United Auto Workers, one of the most central unions in the history of American labor and major in the CIO, and of course, they're the cousins of Unifor. I assume Unifor members would be hearing about this. They might become interested in one person, one vote.
Some members.
If the word gets over the fence,
have been saying that. Yep. Yep. It's a very interesting example, and I think it will inspire people on this side of the border.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Tony Leov. Thank you very, very much. We look forward to hearing. Actually, there's more to learn on this story, so we'll be getting back to you. Thank you.